Welcome to another edition of El Paso Primetime. Today, an interesting show. Our co-host, Nomi Rojas, joins us. How are you doing? Good afternoon.
Hi, Dennis. Yes, my name is Nomi Rojas. I'm the editor of Synapse, the region's life sciences news digest. And today, we are talking to Heather Balsiger. She is the anatomy lab manager and manager of the Willed Body Program at the Paul L. Foster School of Medicine. And that's what we'll be talking about today, willing your body to the medical school for the advancement of medical education. Also in the studio, we have professors of anatomy, two doctors here, Dr. Thomas Guest. Hello.
Hello.
And Dr. Elmas Beal. Hi.
Hello, Nomi.
Good afternoon, y'all.
Yeah. So this Willed Body Program is new. When did it start?
I think we went into business officially on the 14th of February. The paperwork was signed the previous day, the 13th.
And anyone 18 years or older can will their body. I guess you have to be 18. You can't be younger than that, right?
By law, you have to be at least 18 years old.
And so how does that work in terms of like a funeral for survivors of the person who dies? You know, do they still get a funeral, the family, you know?
Yeah, actually, the family, they can still have a funeral. It's best if they contact us first, and that way we can help them make, we wouldn't make arrangements for them, but we would work with the funeral home to make sure, you know, that they're embalmed properly and things like that. But also all of the donors are cremated at the end of our program. And so a lot of families will have a service once they get those remains back.
Okay, so you can still have like the open casket funeral. Mm-hmm. And then when you're done with using the cadaver, right, then you give the ashes back to the family.
Yes.
Oh, so, that's interesting.
I think most people don't have an open casket funeral, but I think most families do have some kind of a memorial service, either when they get the ashes returned or soon after the death.
What's the biggest misconception or fear about willing your body to science?
Ooh, that's a tough question. I think one misconception is that medical schools get their bodies for dissection purposes from unclaimed bodies, that there's a vast supply of bodies out there that we tap into, and that's not the case. All the bodies that we use come from donors who know that we need bodies to teach medical students with, and they'll give their bodies, donate them during their life to us so that we can use them to educate future physicians.
When I first heard about the program, I was kind of grossed out. I mean, but maybe that would be the normal reaction. I mean, we've never had such a program in El Paso. And so, but you know, when you think about it a little more, it kind of makes sense. I mean, it kind of sounds
good. It makes a lot of sense to me. You know, we were talking about this before the program started, but I'll go ahead and put it out there because I think our listening audience really needs to know about it. I'm single. Never been married, and I'm getting to a point where I'm kind of concerned where I'm going to stuff this body once it's done. You know, and I know I don't want to stick the rest of the family because we are a close family, but we're not like, you know, super mega close. You know, they've got their issues, they've got their problems to contend with. The last thing they got to worry about is a cousin or their little nephew floating around someplace, and what are we going to do with the body? Now, again, single, unmarried, parents in the military, and the military has already said, "Oh, I'm sorry, we can't bury you at Fort Bliss, even though you've never been married and you're the only kid." So I said, okay. And I got to thinking about the Neptune Society, but when I saw this in the newspaper, I said, this makes more sense to me. This
What's
makes a
Neptune?
Lot more sense. Neptune Society is this pretty cool little thing. You die. When you die, you... You either get cremated or you have your body wrapped in plastic and is shipped off to Tampa Bay, Florida. And then they put you inside a reef and you become part of this living reef.
Oh,
so
okay.
Either way, one
about.
Or the other. But see, this program actually fulfills two missions. I get to be part of the reef after you guys dissect me and use me for educational purposes, and I like that.
Well, it's really the best way to train medical students. They get to see the real anatomy, you know, on a real human being. And the only way to do that is to have a gift from one person to another.
But there are reasons why you wouldn't accept a body. Could you tell us about those?
Yes. Basically, if in life you have an infectious disease such as HIV, tuberculosis, hepatitis, something that would potentially endanger our students who, you know, aren't used to dealing with infectious diseases yet, they're just first or second year students, most of them, who work on these donors, then we would not be able to accept those bodies. Also, right now, we're not able to accept bodies from those who've had an autopsy performed or were in a traumatic accident or something like that, because right now we're only taking whole bodies.
Okay. What about if your body has a tattoo?
Oh, we love those.
Yeah,
we
see a lot of tattoos.
Okay, well, I'll just have it tattooed heart here, lungs here.
Hey, that's not a bad idea.
Or cut here.
Yeah.
Perforations here.
Yeah, one question I get a lot is, you know, I'll have people call me and say, you know, I have diabetes or I had a heart attack or I had a hysterectomy. You know, does that disqualify me from the program? And absolutely not. We see all sorts of conditions, you know, when we start to dissect the bodies, and those are actually very interesting. So that does not keep you from the program.
And what if you're an organ donor? How does that work if you want to also be in the Willed Body program?
Well, you can. What I've told the people I've spoken to about it is you can sign up for both. And the reasoning I'm using behind this is if you want to donate your organs, that's wonderful. And if they can use them, then in our program right now, you cannot qualify as a donor. But just because you're an organ donor doesn't mean they can use your organs. So if you signed up for both and they couldn't use your organs, then you could still come to us, potentially.
And Nomi, you just witnessed my Willed Body form, right?
Yes,
Doc. I also have a organ donor card I carry in my wallet. So my objective is to outlive my usefulness as a organ donor. Just yes. Wear those organs out, and then you can use my body.
Dr. Beal literally filled out his organ body donation application here in the studio, and he had to have two witnesses. I signed for him, and Dr. Guest was the second witness. I think it would be weird if I was a medical student and I had my teacher's body, you know.
Well, I would actually prefer my body go to another school in the state where nobody knows me.
So can you specify then which school?
Well, I think because Dr. Guest and Dr. Beal and a couple of other professors in our department have donated, then what I would do as the manager of the program is I would say, okay, they've passed away, and I would probably contact, you know, Lubbock or another school, depending, because Dr. Beal was also teaching at Lubbock for a long time, and say, you know, do you guys have a need for this donor? Because it probably wouldn't be appropriate to use them here.
I can tell you from personal experience this year, I got a big surprise. These people know that one of our donors this year is a personal friend of mine, and that got past me. I guess we were a month into this school year before I realized that this was my friend.
Oh.
And it's been kind of emotional, so I don't want to do that again. We have a new policy in the lab that all of us review the donor list each year to make sure that that sort of doesn't happen.
Oh. And Dr. Guest, you were saying that you were the first volunteer to donate your body into this program.
Yeah. Well, I've been a big believer in the Willed Body program. I directed the program at Michigan, University of Michigan, and for 13 years, and so I have always been a big proponent of willing your body to science. And the best thing to do is to, you know, put your body where your mouth is, I guess, you know.
And how many volunteers have you had so far since the program started?
Well, since mid-February when it opened, I've probably signed up about 55 people. And I also have maybe 60 to 70 applications pending that people have requested them and have yet to send them in.
So that sounds like a success so far.
You know, it's been, the community's been very supportive. I'm very, very happy and proud about that.
I'd like to contribute something to that, and that is that El Paso has been a major donor of bodies to the Texas Tech in Lubbock for many, many, many years. And there are many donor forms on file up there at the School of Medicine in Lubbock, and they have asked us to transfer them down here. So if anybody is out there listening that lives in El Paso in the area and they have donated to Texas Tech, then by default, now that we have our own program, they will come here.
What about pets? Like, I mean, do you guys do animal research?
No,
or I don't
no.
know.
Yeah, that's Texas humans. A&M. Texas A&M, has the veterinary science program there has a program where I think they just started it up maybe over the last 5-6 years, where the donation program allows your pets, again, with the same type of thing. If they've been autopsied or they have some kind of a contagious disease, they won't take them. But if they've died of old age or they've just died, boom, there's a manner in which they will accept those bodies.
It would probably create a logistical problem for us because by Texas state law, you can't commingle human and non-human remains. It would be a logistical problem to keep them separate. So I'm glad that we don't do that.
So how do you apply then? How do you find the application?
Oh, there are several ways. We have a website. And we also have a lot of people will call. We have a phone number that you can call and request the forms, and I'll send them to your home. You can download them from our website, or you can email. We have an email address as well, and get those forms and fill them out. And a lot of people think you have to come in person. You don't. You can just mail them in, and they don't need to be notarized, but they do need to be signed by two witnesses, like you just signed for Dr. Beal. But, yeah, we have, you know, probably three different ways you can get those forms.
And so what is that phone number that people can call?
It's actually 915-215-4793.
And there is a fee to be part of the program. It's $150?
Well, actually, to be part of the program is free. That fee applies if your family chooses to receive your cremated remains back, then it's a $150 fee. Some families don't choose to for a variety of reasons, and in that case, we would bury the cremated remains in a cemetery here in El Paso.
Is it an unmarked plot?
Currently, we don't have it secured which plot we're going to use, but we would know where it is. We would mark it.
So would I be able to find it if it was my family member?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Interesting.
Jade, you'd not be able to find me unless you went to Tampa, Florida.
Right. You'd have to go look for him in a coral reef.
Yeah. Oh, Tampa, Florida. Okay, I was thinking of that other program in Tennessee where it's like a forensic science piece of land where they put bodies out to.
Oh, that one. Yeah, that's something different.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm not familiar with the Florida one.
No,
yeah.
I just, that's the Neptune Society thing. I'd be part of the reef.
Okay. Okay.
No, it's a pretty cool little thing. I mean, what they've done out there with the Neptune Society, they've been building this artificial reef on the side of Tampa, Florida now for several years. And so now it's an ecosystem into itself. So you have all these urns and sarcophaguses and things that are building up with all kinds of little critters. And what it's now become is this huge reef. And the Neptune Society has kept this going, and now they're building a new one. And so now your ecosystem, your oceanic ecosystem has really become something nice. That's because people have donated their bodies to that in order for that to happen.
Did they deposit cremated remains, or is that whole? Okay.
Yeah, so
well, we can
once,
do that.
Yeah. After you guys are done with me and I'm cremated, I'll even tack on the $150 check. You guys send me off to Tampa, and I get my vacation.
Yeah. You know, the irony of that is that both my parents and my brother are in the Gulf of Mexico, just south of Tampa. At Longboat Key, that's where they are. They were cremated and put in the Gulf of Mexico.
Okay.
And that's where I'm going to go when after I've been studied and used as much as I can be. I'll be cremated and then sent down to the Gulf of Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
So in case you're joining us this afternoon, we are speaking to Three people from the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center, Paul L. Foster School of Medicine, and we're talking about their new Willed Body program. Can you tell us how it works? Do you assign a cadaver to an individual student?
We set up teams of six students, and they work together. We've had them rotate so that they share the responsibility of being teacher and learner, and we're going to modify that a little bit next year, use a system that Dr. Guest used at Michigan, where we divide those six people into teams A and B. Each has three persons on it, and they alternate who's the teacher and who's the learner from week to week. Does that answer the question?
Yeah. And so does the body go through phases of study? I don't know how else to put it, there's a while where you study the body whole and before you start cutting, how does that work?
Well, the dissection's correlated with what the students are learning in their other classes. So when they study gastrointestinal system, they're dissecting, you know, the abdominal organs, studying the brain. They look at the brain in gross anatomy. So
they keep the same cadaver for an academic year, and they go through the different systems and study them periodically throughout the year, or, you know, an academic year.
Okay.
And to add to that, the very first day of the first year of school, each of those teams of six persons is paired with a clinician, a physician, and they don't do any cutting at all. They just examine the body. It's like a physical, but you can't ask the patient any questions.
Mm-hmm.
And they try to make note of all the bruises and sores and lumps and masses and surgical scars and try to guess what they're going to find. And they record that in an online system that we have. We call it the donor electronic medical record. We're trying to begin the process of teaching them how to write in a medical record. And as they dissect each area, like Dr. Guest was describing, then they add to that those findings. They write new notes and new discoveries, and hopefully it's a learning experience.
It's a curious thing. It really is. I wish I'd had this 40 years ago. You and I wouldn't be having this conversation in this vein, because when I was 14, I went and saw my first autopsy because I wanted to be a mortician. And really kind of enjoyed what I was watching from a scientific standpoint, because I thought, how fascinating the human body truly is. You know, you have the central nervous system that's governed by the brain, but it governs everything else, your endocrine system, your GI tract, your pulmonary system. I mean, everything just, man, it's life, and it's right there on the table.
Yeah.
But we didn't back then have such a wide range of study like that in a, I don't want to call it a fun sort of way, but, you know, it to be able to sit there and to look at a body and try to guess what you're going to find and what you're not going to find, that to me is such a mystery from the very get-go.
It's the best part of what we do, teaching students and sharing that discovery with them and going from the I don't understand to the oh, I get it.
Mm. Where do you keep the bodies? Do you have a big refrigerator?
We do. We have a morgue, and we have a morgue refrigerator where we can hold about 60 cadavers.
There at the medical education building?
Yes, that's okay. Right. And then also, and it's just adjacent to our gross anatomy labs. And in our labs, we have tanks where we store the cadavers that the students use throughout the year. And we have 34 tanks. So we can keep quite a few for people to use throughout the year, and not just our students, but also some of our residency programs as well.
How many cadavers do you need in one academic year for the number of students that you have?
Yeah, right now, including the residency programs that we serve, around 30 per year.
So you're set up then for a couple years already. You said you have about 60.
Well, we have 60 donors, but we're not sure when they're going to pass away.
Oh, that's true.
And we're not encouraging them to go anytime soon.
We hope they take their time.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and also be aware that there are other places, even here in El Paso, that use human bodies. Right here at UTEP, there's a physical therapy Allied Health program, that they have a full body dissection program. For years, they've done the same thing that we've done. We got our donors from our sister school up in Lubbock. That's where they get theirs. So hopefully within the next year or two or three, when we're able to satisfy our own needs, we can begin to satisfy their needs, and they won't have to go 350 miles away to get their bodies. And also the U.S. Army, William Beaumont Army Medical Center has a dissection facility out there. They, too, get their bodies usually from our sister school.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. UTEP does this, and I guess William Beaumont, that's not a surprise to me, but UTEP.
Well, you would certainly, if you get a physical therapist, you want a physical therapist that knows how your body's put together, especially the musculoskeletal system. Physical therapists are pretty amazing in the amount of anatomy that they know and need to know.
Okay. I was on your website looking for information on the Willed Body Program. And just so the listeners know, if you go online and try to find the application, it can be a little confusing on that website. I accidentally went onto the Lubbock Willed Body Program webpage without knowing or without realizing I was on the Lubbock page. And it says on that page that they're not accepting new donors at this time. And so just to, so the listener is aware, you know, when you're going to the Texas Tech El Paso website, make sure you're on the El Paso webpage. And how I finally got to the correct webpage was I Googled TTUHSE, that stands for Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center, comma, and then I put El Paso, and it took me right to the page that I wanted to be.
That's interesting. That, you know, this whole program, the Willed Body Program, I've always been curious about how other schools around the country have done this. But I like the model that you have here because it makes it very simple and very easy, and it's not taxing on the family members. Education is what it is. But the model, I think, is what really piques my interest, is how you guys developed this over the years to streamline it.
It's pretty common across the country, though, that, you know, most schools, like Dr. Guest said, he ran the program at Michigan for many years, and all throughout the state of Texas and other surrounding states, all medical schools, I guess, have Willed Body programs of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
There are minor differences in how they're run, but the big picture is basically the same. Rely on generous people to make a conscious effort to will their body. Sometimes factors come in that has to do with what you were talking about, economics. And
mm-hmm.
Gosh, it costs how much to get buried?
It's very
$10,000 at a minimum? Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And just executing a will is expensive. So mm-hmm. there's a good question that I found on your website. You have a Q&A there. Can I donate my body for research into a specific disease? That's a good question, I think.
Yeah, that's a common question when I speak to potential donors because the phone number I gave actually rings right into my office. So I'm the person they talk to when they call, and they have all, you know, basically, most of the questions on our frequently asked questions list. But that one, you know, they'll tell me a little bit about themselves, which I find kind of nice. It's nice to have that rapport and have that conversation with them. And then they'll tell me, you know, I have this specific disease or disorder. Can you guys study that for me? And so, you know, the answer to that is, you know, that type of research may not be going on. So we can't guarantee that we can study the specific disease that you have. What we can do is, you know, make observations. The students will make observations and look into, you know, kind of what you went through in your life and what disease you had. But we can't guarantee, because you've donated to us, that we can do research specific for that disease.
And the bodies in your program are being used to teach future doctors. They're not being used to make a groundbreaking discovery on a disease like maybe epilepsy or something like that.
Well, they're not being used for specific disease research, but we do use the bodies in various research projects. We have a number of students doing research right now using the bodies. So in addition to learning from the bodies, just the general gross anatomy, some students want to do specific research projects using the bodies. So the bodies, because the donors come to us wanting to be used as well as possible for education and research, we try to do that with all of our bodies.
Okay.
There's a curious question in your frequently asked questions section. If I die in another state, but I've willed my body to Texas Tech, how does a family or how does my estate handle this?
Well, basically, you know, there's only a certain distance. What do you think? It's like 12 hours, Dr. Guest,
something
probably,
like
where, you know, we could still get the cadaver to our facility and still have it be useful, you know, because of decomposition and other factors. So if you were to pass away, you know, my family lives in Indiana. Let's say I go there and I'm a donor and I pass away. The best thing to do is for my family to try to find a medical school in the area, a local medical school. And then say, look, I was a donor at Texas Tech, or, you know, my daughter was a donor at Texas Tech, but she passed away here. Could you guys use her? And the answer is probably going to be, you know, yes, or somebody else close would be able to use them.
Well, I'll ask you a question, Heather. If somebody died in Indiana and had donated here and the family is willing to pay the transportation expenses, we would accept that body, right? But
well,
we wouldn't cover the transportation
expenses. No, and as a matter of fact, if you passed away even somewhere in Texas outside of El Paso County, then the family could pay the transportation expense to get us here. We cover the expense only inside El Paso County.
Okay.
So, but yeah, I mean, essentially, if you wanted to try to fly the cadaver, if you really believe strongly that you wanted them there or arrange for a way that they could be kept cold or something like that, you know, if the family wanted to try to do that, then I think that would be okay. But generally, it's just going to be too difficult or expensive.
Okay. And if you change your mind for some reason and you don't want to be in the program anymore after signing up,
it's not an issue. Whatever the donor wants, that's what we'll do. You know,
okay.
And if any family member has reservations about donating their loved one to us, we'll side with the family member. It's their loved one, and you know, the body will go wherever the family wants the body to go.
Yeah, essentially, you know, I'm not going to check obituaries and neither is anybody else at our program, really, though. So if you decided or your family member decided after you passed away that, you know what, I'm not comfortable with that and they're my family member and it's going to be hard on me, then, you know, all they would have to do is not call us.
Okay.
Yeah, it's that simple. We're not going to,
you're not going to get in trouble for not.
No.
It's a gift.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. I just think personally that this is the right way to go because it's safe, secure. I know where I'm going. And besides, I'm not going to be using the body anymore anyway. You know, it saves my family at least 10 grand in plugging me someplace, God yeah. knows where, you know. And it's all about the education.
Yeah. Well, you can be very useful after your passing.
Mm-hmm. And I could wind up at UTEP. I could wind up at Beaumont. I could wind up at Tech. I just know that at the end of it all, I know that I'm going to still continue to help teach.
Yeah,
and
that's
the
true.
Bottom line.
That's true.
Well, I hope listeners have found this edition of El Paso Primetime to be helpful, interesting, and hopefully we can get you some more volunteers. Can you tell us the number one more time to your office?
Sure. The number is 915-215-4793.
And thank you, Dr. Guest, Dr. Beal.
Thank you.
And Ms. Balsiger.
Thank you.
My name is Nomi Rojas, editor of Synapse, the region's life sciences news digest. Dennis?
Well, Nomi, I hope we've given our listeners enough information to make an informed decision. Thanks for listening to this edition of El Paso Primetime.